from the pages of rpmnewsweekly.com, the site that brings you automotive news that goes behind the headlines. This is the RPM News Weekly Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the RPM News Weekly Podcast. My name's Peter. With me, as always, is RPM News co-founder Rich Tabor. Rich,
say hello.
Yes, just say hello. Sorry, communications are a little off this week because Rich is reporting from his coronavirus bunker down there in south of Boston.
Yeah, really. I guess, you know, everyone's bunkered in.
Not me, but, you know, I'm just kind of, it's funny because, they say isolation and avoid human contact. That's been my whole routine for the last 7 months, so I'm well ahead of everybody on this one.
Is that voluntary or involuntary?
No, I'm actually trying to perfect it, so.
Yeah, well, hey, this is a good test bed. You know, unfortunately, the circumstances are all that we cannot laugh about.
I know. Well, you have to laugh about it. Otherwise, what are you going to do? Worry about it the whole... It's either laugh about it or sit and cry about it, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it certainly has had an effect on everyone. And not the least of which, of course, is automotive events. And, of course, that's what we're focused on. Not to sound too just self-interested in what's affecting us personally. But, you know, we're trying to relay some of the news in case folks haven't heard it. Obviously, big events have been canceled around the country. Clearly, the New York International Auto Show is not going forward, but they've already decided to postpone it instead of just simply cancel it. They're scheduling a new date in the fall, I believe.
No, I think it's right at the end of August. Right.
Oh, okay.
August, I think it's like August 27th. Actually, I'll look it up there. But, yeah, I'm not really looking forward to being in New York in August. But, hey, it sounds, you know, as long as I can actually be in New York in August, you know.
Well, that Jacob Javits Center, that's a pretty cool place, to both yeah. temperature-wise and architecturally. Plus, you know, I mean, how can you go wrong with a place that's just packed with cars and transportation?
And you know, hopefully by then all this stuff is a little bit under control. And I think at that point people will be happy to get out and do things. So that'd be nice. It'd probably be a busy show this year if all goes well and they're back to business as usual for the most part.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the fallout is yet to be seen. You know, clearly there's going to be some serious looking at the bottom line for everybody.
Right.
That too includes Formula E racing, which is something that we're especially fond of. We've been promoting it a bit more than other news sources are on our website, rpmnewsweekly.com. Actually, we just had initiated a forum, and a Formula E forum, hoping to get some contributors who want to talk about and discuss Formula E-related issues. Of course, one of them right now is the cancellation of the races. At least, as I understand what the cancellations are, is that March and April are now off. There's not going to be a Formula E race anywhere on the globe for March or April. That May is tentative, and then hopefully everything goes well for everybody, and June and July are back on, and that ends the season. It ends in London this year, I believe. So we'll see what happens with that. But, it's been an exciting season so far, and it's a shame to have to, you know, scrap it completely. But obviously, under the circumstances, it's the right thing to do.
Oh, definitely, yeah. And where were the next two races scheduled, do you know?
Well, Jakarta was the one that they were concerned about for a bit, and then of course they basically had to just cancel that. I'm not sure how the numbers go as far as those infected with COVID-19 in Indonesia, but I think it's pretty high. It's right in that part of that part of the world that could be looked at as sort of the epicenter. So it makes sense. I think everyone will breathe a sigh of relief in one respect, because there's so much you know, just the unknown is what's terrifying, I think, for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, in matter of fact, it's funny because when I got it, I got the email from the New York Auto Show, just to circle back to that for a second. It had a date on there, but now that I'm looking at the website, they've actually taken the public date off, and it just says August 2020. It doesn't actually say dates anymore, because they originally told us it was going to be August 28th.
Right.
You know, the press days will be prior to that, obviously, and then the public days will be on the 28th. But now they've kind of, I wonder if they're rethinking that as well, because now they've sort of taken that off the public site.
Well, you know, with events, planning any events, is not only conflicts that could happen because of the venue that you're in,
right,
trying to find dates that are available. But
especially a venue like that, yeah.
Or other events that are going on around the city that will conflict with an event that you're trying to do and just make it difficult, you know, that the mayor of the city might say, hey, wait a minute, you know, these two events the same day, that's going to make it impossible for traffic. We can't, you know, there's more to consider than just having the event, especially in a city the size of New York. So maybe that's it. Maybe that would happen. There was some conflict there with some other larger event.
You know, I think, was it the Geneva Auto Show that was last week? And that was sort of like they had to cancel that, but I think they still sort of did some stuff online. And, but, you know, I just don't think that has the impact, you know. I think they'd be probably better off, you know, because any manufacturer can do a debut online. A lot of people are doing that now. They're doing debuts online. But when you get something like the New York Auto Show, there's so much social media interest generated, not only from the news outlets, but from the people who go and you know, share pictures of on Instagram and, you know, share news stories and there's so many social media influencers now that you see, and they're all out there recording things with their phones. And even on the press days, you see a lot of that now. You see a lot of YouTuber guys out there recording.
You know how busy it is in the press room. Just trying to get around to all of the reveals and, you know, the next press conference that's going on the floor. You know, you come down and there's like teams of writers who are just sending off story after story and update after update.
So yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing to watch. You know, if you follow any news like the New York Auto Show, and you see these stories coming out during the show, it's so like real time, and that's what it is. You literally have a room full of guys, editors. You know, you see people on there with full editing suite setups, you know, with three monitors, and they're just pumping out videos at the show while they're there. And I just think that, you know, you lose something if you don't get there. Like the Geneva Auto Show, I think I heard one headline about it, and I don't even think I clicked on it, you know, at all. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go back and look that up. So I'm, you know, hopefully this whole thing, like I said, kind of peaks and blows over, and I think that's obviously what everyone's hoping for. But you know, there's a little bit of positive news. I was just reading earlier today that they're looking to start vaccine trials tomorrow. So that's a plus. I mean, that's insanely quick for a vaccine, you know.
I imagine too, with the trials, that it's going to take a while before they can really establish what the results of the trial are.
Yeah, it's going to take, I would assume, over a year or so. Matter of fact, I'm looking at a story now, and the public health officials say it'll take a year to 18 months to fully validate any potential vaccine. But you got to wonder if a country like China will rush something through. You know, they don't have any fear of, you know, lawsuits or rushing stuff through. So I'm guessing, you know, something will come out of there, you know, for better or worse, I guess. I don't know.
Hmm. Well, you know, on a more local note or inquiry, what have you heard about any of the smaller auto shows, the weekend auto shows?
Well, we were kind of talking about that yesterday. I have to imagine that they're just like anything else. If this doesn't blow over in the next couple of weeks, because usually they start, you know, it's still a little cold out. So, you know, I think we're a good month away from, any of the cruise nights or anything, you know, you get maybe even a little further out. So hopefully this will subside enough so that people can have even the local car shows. But, you know, again, it's like it would be sad if you can't. But then again, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I guess it's not the worst thing if you have to put off a cruise night or an auto show.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely going to be a change of perspective. Leads me to wonder, you know, in the aftermath of this particular pandemic, will there be a global sort of change of consciousness in terms of, you know, how we are so interconnected, not just with automobiles, you know, and the nature of transportation and the business of automobiles, the industry of automobiles, but with a lot of other things. You know, there's a lot to look at as far as how dependent we are on each other, and you know, the idea of isolating oneself seems next to impossible. I mean, we're having a small bit of isolation that, you know, has been imposed because of either quarantines or just simply good judgment. But you know, once we're back to something that resembles normalcy, you know, we kind of, you know, really come to terms with that idea that there's a great reason to look at how interconnected everything is, and how important it is for us to keep that in mind, you know, that we depend on each other.
Well, and it speaks to preparedness too. I mean, or even taking things seriously. I mean, people still aren't taking this seriously as seriously as they should. And then the other side of the spectrum, people are panicking and taking it not too seriously, but, you know, raiding the supermarkets. Mm-hmm. And it started out obviously as a joke with the whole toilet paper thing, but now you go to the supermarket and people are buying. I mean, it's just crazy what's cleaned out. I was in Hannaford's supermarket tonight, and you look at the pasta aisle, the bread aisle, you know, the can aisles, the supermarket. It's incredible. Ironically, except for the I was noticing that the gluten-free bread and the specialty breads weren't touched, which is kind of funny if you think about it. People are, they're gonna hoard, they're gonna hide, you know, they're gonna hide out in their bunker with bread, but not, they don't need no new gluten-free stuff. They're good with, you know.
I saw something similar the other night when I went shopping, was that there was no flour to be found.
Oh, you were telling me about that. But it was the whole wheat flour, right?
The whole wheat flour hadn't been touched. There was a ton of it there. And then
That's probably what made me think of it earlier today, because when I was walking through the bread section, I saw that they had the high-end and gluten-free breads. And mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, that's kind of funny. But what were you going to say?
And even the organic section in the supermarket that I go to, it's in a separate part of the store. It's not in with the regular aisles of food. And so I went over there to see if they had any flour. And, of course, there was plenty of flour, organic flour, that was over there. It is kind of interesting. That, you know, other than the dark side of what's going on, there is, I think, a bit of comedy in there somewhere about about your experience with the bread and mine with the flour.
It's annoying, and I didn't go to the supermarket to go hoard things, but now it's like, do I buy extra stuff because of what's going on? You know, it's like, I tend to keep a lot of like soups and stuff at the house anyway, and pasta. We always have a lot of that lying around for some reason.
Yeah, it's probably a good idea to get yourself a 2-week supply of things.
I know, but I feel like a jerk doing it too.
Buying like it's the end of the world is probably not the way to go.
Right, and it's, you know, it's, you would think that even like, even baby formula, you know, people are buying baby formula. I was looking for diapers at Walmart, and the diaper section was completely cleaned out.
Yeah, well, you know, people don't want to go out more than they have to. I think that's part of it, and that makes sense. That's a good thing. But yeah, you know, deal with it in a rational way. You know, how much do you think you're going to use over the next couple of weeks? You know, and you know, stock up on things that aren't perishable. That sort of a thing. But, you know, when we speak of experiences, I'm going to turn the wheel here a little bit So, let's talk about our rides of the week. I guess that would get us into like a real car frame of mind.
Well, you don't want to talk about viruses anymore and cancellations. And one thing I wanted to just reference real quick, you were talking about local shows. Joel Chaparral at NewEnglandAutoshows.com wrote a little bit of a piece about that. If you want to go check it out, you know, it's sort of like a, you know, the CDC has guidelines for event coordinators, and he does like a quick rundown of that. And so if you want to check out that site, or maybe we can put a link up to it in the show notes. But we've got sort of a double Hyundai thing going on with the cars this week. We're on like a string.
I guess a lot of Hyundai models have floated through the press fleet, and I had an opportunity to drive the Elantra Sport, which is a carryover into 2020. There was a little bit of a powertrain adjustment that they had with the car for some models, not for the Sport so much. The Sport is still moving along with that 1.6 turbo, which is a nice little engine. The DCT that they have for it, the 7-speed DCT dual-clutch transmission, it's a good combination with that 1.6. I think the mapping, though, is much better when you actually put it into Sport mode. The normal mode, I wasn't so fond of the transmission mapping. But the car seemed to be come out of itself a bit when you got it into the Sport mode. There's also a Smart mode, which is like an eco mode, if you want to pop it there, maybe save a little bit on the gas side of things. But, you know, I think the biggest question I have about a car like the Elantra, which this was actually a pretty nice ride, but there was really, like, what do you say about, what's going to get an audience for this car? What is it that's going to compel someone to take a look at the Elantra, especially in these days of crossovers and more utilitarian type
right.
of vehicles.
It's a hard sell for sure, and Hyundai still surprisingly has, you know, three sedans in the market.
I know they know something, you know.
You know, if you count the Genesis line, I mean, which is not really Hyundai anymore, but you know, there's even more, you know. So, and Elantra's in a weird place. It's sort of that in between the Sonata and the Accent being the entry level, and the Sonata being sort of their midsize. Well, it is their midsize, sort of. And you know, the Sonata, you're looking at, I think it's like $4,000 price difference. So,
what's going to get someone into an Elantra? Well, they certainly have enough models. You know, if you go down through the lineup, not even counting the Elantra GT, which is really, it's a different model. It's more of the hatchback take of things, but and plus the whole performance equation is a little different with the GT. They're using the 1.6 liter engine, but what their offerings are very different. The standard Elantra, they've got the SE, they've got the let me run down through their model. If you give me a second here, I'm sure. Just going to have to float through some stuff here.
You mentioned the Elantra GT, and that is, you know, I don't, even more so than the sedan in the U.S. market. That's kind of an oddball car if you think about it. That is definitely a European focused car. It's basically, it's not like a, you know, a crossover like when you get into the Venue. But, you know, it sort of has that little bit of a lift-back style to it. And I don't think anyone really makes anything like that anymore here. And it's one of those cars that you look at and go, oh, yeah, they still make that car. And it's interesting. That's the sad thing. I think it gets a little bit lost, especially even on the Hyundai website. You know, you got to scroll all the way to the bottom to find that car. So.
You know, I'm taking a look at some of what Hyundai has published as far as what the vehicle is. You know, for 2020, the regular Elantra carries over with the powertrain enhancement. What they're really talking about is that the 6-speed automatic transmission, which was available in 2019 has been changed over to what they're calling a smart stream, IVT, which is a continuously variable transmission, but IVT being intelligent variable
transmission. Yeah, they got their own little company name for it.
Right. And they discontinued the six-speed manual transmission that you could get on the regular Elantra. But you can get a manual transmission if you go back to the GT.
Well, that makes sense because that's got the little hot hatch vibe going on, and you've got the N-line version, which I'm not sure if that comes with a manual.
That's where you'll find it. N-line.
Well, you got to imagine an Elantra sedan with a manual must be like a unicorn in the automotive world. I mean, how many of those did they sell? You're talking about, you know, sort of like I don't want to say entry level, but, you know, sort of a mid level as far as their sedans go. And then on top of that, you add a manual transmission. It's got to be hard to by those.
Yeah, and you talk about it, you know, like where it exists in their pricing structure. This is the car, the Elantra. This is the regular Elantra. And we're talking about the Sport here. I'll go back to the Sport, which is the one that I had an opportunity to drive for a week. That's at the high end of their, just the regular Elantra line for their sedans. And, you know, it starts at $24,000, but, you know, you're probably going to want to get the extras with it. The one that we were driving, which was actually a 2019, but it's really a carryover. You know, essentially it's a carryover because it didn't. The Sport didn't have an opportunity to, take advantage of any of those changes that they had, and nor would it necessarily want to if you want to really still be a Sport model. To go over to the CVT would probably not make sense for the Sport. As an add-on, it had the premium package, which is a $2,000-plus add-on, and it also had carpeted floor mats, which added another $155. Well, so the final price for the model that I drove was $27,160. But the base, no frills Sport model, which hardly no frills is the right word for it.
Yeah,
hardly that. It's $24,000.
Yeah,
So that's a very reasonably priced car. It's not in the $15,000 range, but it's not meant to be. You know, this is a car that's meant to have a little bit of style, a little bit of interest. But I'm not sure that there's anything in particular that jumps out and says I've got to have that Elantra. That's kind of what I'm wondering is that what gets the buyer into that car I suspect that a lot of it is word of mouth. You know, they've been successful with the car, and people, it gets a reputation of being reliable. And with this car, you've got a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. 10-year. 10-year, right. Not 5-year, 100,000. It's a 10-year. So, if you baby the car, you're all set with that powertrain. For 10 years. That's pretty remarkable.
Right, and you do, in the Sport model, you do get a fair amount of equipment for 22, though, even at the base, 22. I mean, you still get all the safety, obviously, like the blind spot collision warning, but I think you get that across the board now, forward collision assist. And they also get, with the Sport model, you get, you still get a touchscreen display, you get leather heated seats in the front, so...
And you are right about the safety. The safety, that was one of the upgrades for 2020, was that the SE on the bottom end, where forward collision avoidance and lane keeping assist, they weren't available on the SE in 2019, but now they are standard on the SE.
I think they're going pretty much almost across the board on that, on the safety Hyundai. I think they're giving you a lot more now. But a lot of manufacturers actually are moving towards that. I think Toyota sort of started that trend, with the safety sense. Toyota safety sense you can get on a lot of even the lower end models now.
It makes a lot of sense. It really gives them something to crow about.
Well, and it's safe. and it's funny, you're driving the mid-level sedan. I'm driving sort of, and you can't really say mid-level when you go to SUVs, because Hyundai does have a pretty wide spread of SUVs at this point. I'm driving the Hyundai Kona. So I guess it sort of falls if you compare it to where the car you're driving fits in the lineup, you got the Venue as the new entry level compact SUV, and then of course they don't call it they don't call it crossovers. I noticed at Hyundai they call it SUVs, which I think is a little optimistic. You know, I'm driving the Kona, which is, you know, as press cars go, they send you that sort of top of the line trim. So I've got the what is it, the Ultimate version, yeah, whatever they call it. Yeah, the Ultimate, and it's in that really nice sort of pulse red, I think they call it. And that, you know, and the one I'm driving has the 1.6 turbo. It has the heads up display, which seems a little bit like something Mazda. You know, it's got that little flip up plate of the flip up glass. You turn the car on, and it flips up, and it projects it on that. And it seems a little weird in this day and age, kind of like, because Mazda had that back, and they don't even do that style of, of heads up display anymore.
Mitsubishi too, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, probably, yeah. I mean, but as far as cars go, you know, it's around the 27,000 mark, and you get a fair amount of equipment for that. You get the 8-inch touchscreen with the navigation, and it has the wireless phone charger, which is nice. And but you know, it's funny when you talk about size of these things. I just came out of the F-250, so driving that thing is like driving a go-kart. and it's hard to almost, and this is what's funny about when you review these things or when you drive these things, you want to get in it and try to not, you know, kind of get in something with an open mind and be like, okay, this is what this is. But it's coming out of something like an F-250, and that's exactly what I came out of. And then before that, I had a couple luxury cars. And so you get into this and you got to get kind of in that mindset of, all right, this is what this car's price is. But then, you know, I picked up Max from school, and he gets in the car. First thing he says is, wow, this thing's tiny. Like, it's so small. Yeah. It's like, all right, so it's not just me. I'm not trying to put it down or anything. It is what it is. If you need something bigger, then you go up to the Santa Fe, or you go up to the Palisade, even if you've got the dough, because that's a pretty nice driver. But, yeah, it's pretty reasonably priced and a nice driver.
Well, would you say that the Kona is one of those cars that is definitely a city dweller's car, who would have a nice car if they wanted to take a drive from Boston to New York? In general, it's really kind of it's not really a touring kind of a car.
I mean, no, definitely not. That's fair to say. But you're looking at, you know, where I live, you get a lot of like country roads and such, and you can pop it in sport mode, and the transmission is it shifts pretty well, and I don't think it's the CVT, not yet at least. It's a 6-speed, I think this one has a 7-speed dual clutch automatic, which of course is, you know,
so
you can...
That's pretty much the same powertrain that I have in the Elantra Sport, you know, the 1.6 liter engine with the 7-speed DCT.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably, definitely, yeah. And I think it's around 200 horsepower or so. I'm just kind of looking that up now. I just lost my page I was on. I don't have the Monroney sticker right in front of me.
I just pulled it up. 175 horsepower, 195 torque.
On the Ultimate Edition? Because that's the one I'm driving right now.
Kona Ultimate DCT.
Oh, okay. So now I thought the Sonata was, I thought the Elantra was 200 horsepower. Or am I thinking of the Sonata?
It is. It's 201. So this 195. The torque. Torque is about the same, but the torque is the same. 195, but the 1.6, they're getting 201 horsepower out of it Sport.
I wonder why they detuned it somewhat. Is it because of the all-wheel drive, maybe? Or the optional? Because ours has the optional all-wheel drive. Matter of fact, for some reason, I noticed after I drove it for like 2 days that somebody had the all-wheel drive lock on. There's a little button you can kind of do the all-wheel drive. I'm like, oh, why is that on? You know, it's not raining. It's not snowing anymore. And it's weird that doesn't reset when you start the car, but I guess it does not. You can't complain. For the money, it's a great little car. It's got plenty of features. Heated seats are awesome. That's the one thing I like about Hyundai. Hyundai and Volkswagen do good heated seats.
Yes, I can attest to that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, they heat up fast. Just what you want in the colder weather. Although, we've been sort of a little bit of Mother Nature trickery in, and has not given us much of a winter here.
Yeah.
In southern New England, anyway.
It's been nice.
I guess I'm not sure what to say. Count my blessings, or is that a blessing, or is the other shoe going to fall at some point? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it was just a very unusual winter this year. Very warm in ways that are scary.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we've already had 60-degree days up here, you know, in somewhat northern New Hampshire. Imagine a 60-degree, like almost touching 60s in March. You know, that's talk about abnormal. I think it's going to be at that point next week too. I went and bought a snowblower, and it's been in the 50s since I bought the snowblower. I knew it was going to happen. Well, I said that was going to happen. I knew it.
Yeah.
And I bought an electric snowblower too. By the way, I don't know if I mentioned that, but works pretty good. You know, and it's funny. You talk. We always talk about EV cars and people's reluctance to go electric. And so I was up at this store in an Aubuchon Hardware, which is kind of like a small, you know, hardware, it's a smaller chain of hardware store, but they always have what you need.
Let me jump in here for a quick second. Okay. I thought you were going to go with a little description of the Kona EV, which is another version of that Kona.
You're going somewhere else. But
with
you know what? It's a shame because we did have the Kona EV not too long ago, but when I had the Kona EV, it was freezing out. So, one, I didn't really go out all that much, and two, you know, it hinders the performance of that, drivetrain. Well, any electric drivetrain. When you're talking about 10, 20 degree weather, you know, you're gonna suffer some loss when it comes to range, which is fine because with me it's like once the car's in my area, I generally maybe will drive 40 miles every other day. You know, I won't like I'll go up to the school and pick the kids up and maybe go over to the Walmart, which is about 30 miles away. You know, it's about 40 miles round trip, maybe a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And then I wish I had went and stocked it with toilet paper. But,
well, you know, here's an interesting thought, you know, just kind of circling way back to what we were discussing very right off the bat today. And that's, the, you know, like one of the things I've been thinking about is that I've got this press car this week. I've already been through the Elantra. And what am I going to do with it? You know, I mean, I don't have the usual errands to run and those sort of things with the isolation, the self-imposed isolation that we've given ourselves. Maybe the automobile is actually a place to go. I can get in the car and just drive for an hour just to get out of the isolation.
Yeah, I mean, unless they start putting restrictions on travel, you know. I'll tell you, mm-hmm. I'd rather be in a car right now than on a subway train or...
Yeah, that's for sure.
You know, I do that every once in a while myself. You know, just go out and take a ride to get out of the house. And
well, I interrupted your you were saying that you were going into Aubuchon Hardware.
Oh well, no, I was joking around about the snowblower. You know, I purchased a snowblower, and so I go there to the hardware store, and you know, like we were talking about with electric cars and adoption. So they had this one electric snowblower in stock, and it was marked down like I want to say it was $100 off from its original price. And so I asked the lady, and I'm like, you know, hey, how are those electric snowblowers? And she's like, we've never sold one.
Like, really?
It was such a dismissive. She goes, we've never sold one. I said, oh well.
Hey, Pete, you're a first adopter here.
Yeah, I'm an early adopter. But it's funny that attitude was just like, eh. Well, no wonder why you never sold one, because you just basically dissed the thing and told me it was been here.
That's the same experience a lot of people get when they go into dealerships looking for electric cars.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, and she said that, you know, when I bought it, I'm like, well, you know, I think she was surprised I bought it, and she basically, you know, made a little bit of a comment about. You know, now they don't have to push it around, push it in and out all every day. So, but it works great.
Here's a question I got about the electric snowblower. Are you connected to power, or does it have a battery?
It has two lithium-ion batteries, and they have their own little charger, and you pop them in, and that's it. You get a pretty decent amount of of time on it, I was kind of worried because we have sort of, I would say a long driveway, but a bigger space. You know, it's a two-car length driveway. But it, you know, it seemed to tackle it pretty well. I haven't had any real major snowstorms since then, but we've had a fair amount. And I may, you know, depending on how it goes, maybe over the summer I might buy a small gas one too. But so far I've been happy with it. It's done pretty much what I've asked it to do. You know, I've used it as pretty much as you would a snowblower. But it was just funny, the whole buying experience, and that's why when you talk about electric cars, it kind of, you know, we talk about electric cars, it makes me...
It's so funny how it does really mirror. You know, you've talked about that too when you go into a dealership and the electric cars are tucked in the back somewhere.
Yeah, as always. You know?
So yeah, that's it's maybe that I'm going to say maybe that will change, but I'll step a little further and say that will change.
Well, here's a matter of fact, when you talk about all this coronavirus, since we're talking about this and electric cars, you know, look at Tesla now. You know, they just introduced the Model Y. They just started doing deliveries Saturday. This weekend, not you know, completely just for them, a coincidental planning. You know, it wasn't something; it just worked out that way. But people are still doing deliveries and they're still getting their cars. But when you look at somebody like Tesla now, if people are too paranoid to go out of the house, will they have the advantage over manufacturers or even just regular dealerships now?
Because in the ability to sell cars online,
they only sell cars online, so. You know, if you look at dealerships, I mean, you know, my wife, she works for a Mazda dealership, and they haven't really had a slowdown yet. This weekend was the first weekend where she actually looked at sort of the sales and what her schedule is. And this weekend was slow, but consistent. They still sold cars, and their traffic hasn't slowed down at all, really, up until this weekend. And from what I was reading, you know, dealerships around the country, I guess it probably matters by location and how sort of precautionary people are being or you know, in a given area. I'm sure that dealerships aren't packed in Seattle where they've been hard hit by the coronavirus. But, you know, sure. In Massachusetts, it's still in that sort of lax attitude towards it.
By the end of this weekend, it's definitely changed. I think that we could say that, you know, today seems to have been a watershed day not only phone calls that I've had today talking with people and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You just get a sense that there's been a clearer shift to recognizing how precarious we are right now.
Yeah. But, you know, going back to somebody like my point about Tesla was, now, do they have an advantage in this market where they literally can, somebody can order a car and have it dropped off in their driveway without even talking to anybody if you really don't want to? You know, they just drop the car off. Or are people going to be scared about the market and the economy? And you know, if people sort of view it as a, a luxury car or you know, is somebody going to be sort of put off from buying a premium car?
Well, even any car at this point you could ask that question about almost any vehicle. Is that, you know, a buyer's going to want to take the risk of committing to a 5 or 6 year loan if they're not even sure whether or not the company that they're working for is going to be able to stay in business after, you know, this COVID-19, the coronavirus situation, has run its course, and how long that is. You know, things are very up in the air for a lot of people, and most of the time it's very hard to make those decisions when you aren't exactly certain of your future. So yeah, there's probably going to be a big time of reckoning, I think, for a lot of dealers. Tesla might have a little bit of an edge there. I'm not sure. There's a lot of places though where you can go to buy cars online.
Maybe they're not
at the same stage as Tesla is. You know, where that's their whole marketing and that's their whole business plan. It's based on that. But, you know, there's a lot more shopping that can be done. Although I'm not sure how many dealerships are set up to actually do the sale online.
I don't think there's, this is the problem. And this is one of the problems when you talk about, when we always talk about electric cars and, you know, the dealership model still hasn't changed. So if you want to buy a Ford, you know, the Ford Mach-E, you still have to go to the dealership and sit in the room with the finance guy. And, you know, you still have to do that. You still have to go through that process. You can't just...
The shakedown room, right?
Yeah, you should get floor mats, and you should get, you know, this protective film, which, you know, maybe if it's reasonably priced, go for it. But you know what I mean? It's like you still have to kind of do that dance and sit in the room with the guy as he tries to tell you about warranties you need and that will never change.
Do you remember the days when they used to try to sell you Rusty Jones?
Yeah,
that was a big deal.
Hello, Rusty Jones.
They made you feel like a fool if you didn't. You know?
Yeah, they still do that. I mean, they still, I think they just call it undercoat now, you know, or the extended warranty plans, I think, other things like that now. But I don't know. Whoever bought my MG from the dealership back in 78, they definitely fell for the Rusty Jones thing because that car is just caked with undercoating. between the layers of undercoating and the leaky oil, because it's a British car, that car is like preserved like a museum piece underneath.
You got more than you bargained for when you bought it.
Yeah, what happened to Rusty Jones? By the way, that just went away. That just disappeared. Rusty Jones, man, that was everywhere. You always saw the advertisements. Hello, yeah, Rusty Jones. Yeah. Remember the commercials? But I don't know whatever happened to.
I can still picture those commercials, boy.
Yeah, and the guy.
This is beginning to sound like a Facebook moment. You know, like, you know, do you remember when?
Yeah. Oh, they went into bankruptcy. They went bankrupt. And 1988, I'm looking at Wikipedia. 1988, Rusty Jones filed for bankruptcy protection, claiming that the automaker's extension of factory warranties against rust had caused their business to deteriorate. Oh, look at that. Their business rotted away. Who knew?
There was a hole in the business plan, right?
Yeah. Oh, there you go. So I guess the industry killed that. But ironically, because they sell that. But, yeah, so, you know, be interesting to see where things go in the next couple of weeks. And
yeah. Hey, you know, speaking of where things are headed, you know, a couple of updates on the RPMNewsWeekly.com website. We now have a Formula E forum, which I think we've talked about before.
Yeah, we'd like you to jump on, and if you want to talk about, you know, the pause in the action, or even the action, you know, there's still an exciting season, even though the action is paused. So
yeah, you know, you got a favorite driver. You know, there's a lot that goes on at the racetrack, and in the design of cars, there's a new version of the racer coming out next year for the next season. So there's a lot of discussion that can happen. We're looking forward to having an opportunity to set up, to have a place for people to go to have those discussions. So it's fledgling. There's really not much happening on the forum at this moment, but you know, those things grow as you get people to recognize that it's there. A few other things that we've been doing too is that we're just making our social media presence a little bit more easy to get to, and also if you're a Pinterest fan. You'll be seeing more of RPM News Weekly on Pinterest, making that a lot easier, to connect with the site. So there's those items there, and we have a Stitcher for those that like to listen to podcasts. We're available on Stitcher, working out a few little quirks in the way it's presented right now, but you can easily get the podcast there.
Yeah.
So making all these nice little website upgrades, I just like to talk about that. I hope that you'll go to our site, and you can subscribe now so that you'll get an email notice when we post something new. And we promise you that's all that we will do. We're not going to be bombarding you with other junk mail or even selling your email address to some other entity. No, that's not going to happen. So, subscribe is the way to go. If you're going to use the forum, you'll need to also register for the forum. You'll have a password given to you that you can use to log in and post things on the forum. So hope to do that. We hope we got a really good audience for this. So that's kind of where I'm at this week with our podcast.
Yeah, and
have you got something else?
No, I was just gonna say also check us out on YouTube and you know, definitely subscribe. Subscribe, like, and pass along our videos because, you know, we have some good content on there and we hope that people enjoy. So, but, you know, YouTube's a sea of you know, we're just one little buoy in a full ocean. So you got to kind of subscribe and pass the word along for us because it's hard to get.
Well, you know, I do have good news that we did make a dent in things in 2019. We approached 70,000 views of our videos, and we had over 2,000 viewing hours.
Oh, that's nice.
So,
there's a couple of videos that stand out. You know, like the 2020 Ford Police Interceptor video is doing well. So we hope people enjoy that. I mean, you know, that's Ford's next generation of police cars. And it's interesting because, you know, we talked about this on the podcast in the past, but, you know, they're... Ford is definitely taking a little bit more of an environmental approach to the police cars now with the available hybrid versions. And, you know, hopefully we'll see that type of technology be adopted more as it's proven and as it's proven reliable. I mean, if a police department's going to do a police car, it's got to be reliable. So be happy to see that. And then the smart EQ that, you know, we always talk about, like, the funny thing with doing anything on social media or anything on YouTube or even online anywhere is you never know what people are going to like, you know, or people are going to pick up. So we did a little piece on the 2019 Smart EQ for two before it got discontinued with Ryan Newcomb. And that's like, I think, our most popular video. And you just never know. You know, here's a car that they can't give away in the United States because, you know, they've actually pulled it from the market. But yet, we have almost 50,000 views on the review we did, so and positive, you know, feedback on it as well.
Yeah.
So you just never know, you know.
Yeah, there's an audience for it. Yeah, that was probably one of our most unexpected surprises. Nice surprise.
Yeah.
How often that's been viewed.
And then the Beetle convertible. Here's another car that nobody bought towards the end, and we put out a video on it, and it gets a fair amount of views, more than. You know, some of our other views, videos. So you never know. It's kind of funny how that works, what people pick up on. And
it's just that nature of social media. You know, someone sees it, maybe they send it along on their feed, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, and all of a sudden you get more of an audience than you might have expected.
Yeah. And with that, we're going to say, I guess, we'll wrap it up and say goodbye to our audience. Huh?
One last thing.
Oh, okay.
Speaking of those videos that we have up on YouTube, we're looking to get posted very soon a video on the Hyundai Venue, all new car.
Just trying to keep with our Hyundai theme going on.
We
seem to be on a Hyundai.
Just another 30 seconds.
Yeah. What did you think of the Venue? Well, don't give away anything in your video, but... you know, overall impressions, and again, this is, we're talking about a small economy car, but it's, you know, stylish and has a fair amount of equipment for what it is. So it definitely looks like a fun little city car.
Yeah, that's the direction I think you'll see that we head in with the video. Stay tuned.
As they say. All right, well, I guess that wraps it up, and, you know, just hunker down in your bunker for the next couple of weeks and, you know, listen to our show.
Right.
Watch our videos over and over again. Then that'll really make you want to scream and get out of the house. But all right, Rich, I guess I'll talk to you next week.
Okay, stay safe.
So long, everybody.
Thanks for joining us this week on the RPM News Weekly podcast. Don't forget to check us out online at rpmnewsweekly.com for more automotive news and interviews.